First of all, the pollock is, of course, the largest, just probably the largest biomass species in the Bering Sea, and total allowable catch in 1992 is approximately 1.2 million metric tons. This quota is based on a 15% reserve allowance that the North Pacific Management Council has always kept aside. And so they, in their inshore-offshore discussion, they attached this coattail amendment, if you will, and took from the reserve. So it was basically, in that respect, non-controversial because it didn't take from an inshore boat nor an offshore boat. It was a management reserve that no one had been harvesting. So relatively uncontroversial, non-controversial. The inshore, offshore, okay, that passed and it's gone to the secretary and been approved. The ITQ, obviously, is quite controversial, and we're a little bit torn as a Department of Community and Regional Affairs. We certainly support the CDQ aspect of it, but we're also concerned for the mid-sized fishing communities that are suggested would be negatively impacted. So they should. I just saw in a letter from the North Pacific Council, there is a social economics plan that is available for the public for comment. And that should be something that we all take a look at before that April meeting in the event they do take action on the IFQ issue. But really, in this case, with this particular quota, they are separate issues.
Thank you.
What's the motion?
Motion is to accept a $300,000 increment to Community and Regional Affairs Community Development Assistance for CDQ implementation. Assistance. Is there objection?
Yeah.
There is objection. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Blair?
I'll pass.
Representative Barnes?
Wouldn't it be nice if we could all pass? Yes.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Chaffetz?
Yes.
Representative Copeland?
Yes.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips? No. Representative Sharp? No. Representative Omer? Yes. Representative DeVar? Yes. Representative McClain?
Yes.
Representative
Boyer?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, when we get the capital budget before we look at this again, instead of transfer, because it's still is a one-time grant. It has to be funded, but where is really the question.
But we will work at getting some more refined grant.
Yeah. Add more to the budget.
Why don't you let me know, too, how much you're going to lobby for Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan on their fisheries, and how much the state has to pay for that. I got a cannery that's shut down and only operates about 6 months out of the year now, and doesn't have a cannery left anymore, but now we're going to spend state money to go lobby.
Because of Sabrefish or halibut, Representative Taylor?
You bet. We were using all of them. We ain't anymore. They're going to trawlers off.
Department of Corrections. First Amendment advisor.
I'm sorry. Before we leave Community and Regional Affairs, as long as we're doing fish, we might as well take up the one last amendment that I'm aware of. Representative Lincoln proposed an amendment yesterday. We determined it wasn't appropriate in Fish and Game because Fish and Game does not handle designated grants. They have no way to manage grants. So this is a proposal instead for Community and Regional Affairs to manage this grant. We reduced it to $50,000, and it's before you, and I would move it at this time.
This is a net 40.
Pardon?
A net 40.
Yeah.
Right.
Their objection.
Yes.
There is objection. Secretary, call the roll.
Wait a minute. Let's have an explanation here.
We talked about deleting.
Especially this free pass agreement and caribou treaty. We're deleting from that.
Representative Lincoln?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
You're deleting $10,000 for the free pass agreement and caribou treaty.
Right.
Which is... I've been left with the impression was vitally important for the people in the interior.
And perhaps, I don't know, know if the commissioner is still here. Can answer this, but this is an agreement that the $10,000 could be deleted from designated grants and used for this. That it will not affect any treaty.
The passage across the border of traditional.
I know what this is. That's why I've been always supporting it over the years. Now we're taking it out. Maybe I was left with the wrong impression then. Because the $10,000, as I understand it, was supposed to be a treaty between the U.S. and Canada on the Caribou Treaty and dealing with the indigenous people on that to work out the differences between federal law there and the federal law here. To me, this was sort of important because you're dealing with somebody's livelihood.
Representative Lincoln.
Thank you. I'm sorry I don't have the backup right here in front of me, but this has already been checked out, and that there isn't a problem with the 10,000 designated grants being deleted. And I assure you that I would be most concerned about that if there is a problem with that, because it affects those very people within my district. So that has been checked out.
Any further questions? Is there an objection? Representative Phillips, do you maintain your objection?
I understand what the designated grant is supposed to do. I'm not opposing that, but if that was not a problem, why was it in there in the first place? $10,000. Now, I've always supported this one, and I hate designated grants, but this one, the only reason I support it because it vitally affected people's livelihood, whether it's cash economy or subsistence lifestyle. And those are some of the criteria that I have been following through the years.
Representative Lincoln?
Oh, I don't have any more to add, Madam Chair.
Representative Phillips, do you still maintain your objection? Clerk, please take roll.
Is there objection? Without objection, the amendment's adopted. Representative Sharp.
I wanted to ask the DCRA people one question before they got away, if that's
okay. Sure.
John and Lamont. I want to ask on the regulations, maybe Ramon's going to answer, regulations or requirements or conditions on receiving a daycare grant. Is those requirements regulations by the department, or are they fixed in law on what has to be submitted as information from the receiver of the grant?
I would imagine, Mr. Chair, that would be through regulations.
I would encourage the department to look at the regulation and require that the before grants are allowed, that at least a documentation, an economic report, a profit and loss statement, whatever you want to call it, from each organization requesting the report or the grant, detailing the five highest paid people in that organization, what the salaries are, the minimum of this, how much lease payment or rent is paid to any relation that own the building which is being occupied and ran as a daycare grant center. And I also would like to know how much money is contributed from these organizations to political action committees. I think we ought to know how much money is coming from these grant receivers and who's getting the money as far as the top dollars is going out of those organizations being paid out.
Is it, for example, like Kid Pack?
Yeah, for example,
really
like Kid Pack.
Spenders.
Yeah, I'd like to know if those monies are coming from the daycare centers as such or from individuals, which is okay. But if they're receiving state grants and some of that money is dribbling out into PACs. It'd be interesting to know, at least if we didn't want to do anything about it, that's fine. But I think that should be public information. And I also would like to know, especially the highest paid salaries of the top three or four or five, and the amount of lease being paid on the buildings being run as daycare centers, and who owns the building, who the leases are being paid for. Thank you. Is any of that required now?
I want to address that, those comments, Chair. The homes and centers are required to report to departments how they spend the money. And the areas that they spend the money primarily in are in wages and salaries and equipment, toys and those kind of things. That's where the majority of the funds are spent. They can also spend the money on food, supplies, those type of things. They cannot use that money for rent. Now, they report to us, and they tell us where they spent the money, but we accept what's on that report. We don't go and audit that report and go through and find out whether or not they actually spend that money where they say they have. But they do report to it, and we have it broken down by home and by center.
But do you have it by individual, the highest paid individuals within the organization?
No, we don't.
So you don't know if they're getting $30,000 a year or $100,000 a year?
No, we don't. We do know how much the each individual receives in terms of wages for the grant program, but not how much their total salary is.
Thank you. Okay. Department of Correction. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday we heard from the Department of Corrections, in which they told us that they'd already started on the fiscal year 92 level, $3 million in the hole, and then they were asked to take another $4 million. So what I'm going to ask at this time, and not pointed at any particular facility, but that we give the department some flexibility within its reorganization. And I'd like to amend my amendment that we have before you from the eliminate the reorganization reduction of 2220.1 to half of that. In other words, that we put the figure in there that we eliminate the reorganization reduction of $1,110,000. What in effect that will do, of course, is to still say that they have to take a $1.1 million reduction, but it will give them at least a little bit more flexibility in their reorganizational planning. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the amendment.
So the reduction would be
$1,110,000.
For discussion. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Brown?
No. No.
Representative Jackal?
Yes.
Representative Cole?
Yes.
Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
No.
Representative Barnes?
No.
Representative Navarre? Representative McClain?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
Environmental Conservation. Representative Sharp.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to put my amendment that was on there yesterday here?
Here?
The EC?
Sure.
Yeah, at the end, at the very end.
Okay.
And make it
on the EC?
Yeah.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number one addresses an item that was on the page of that we discussed yesterday on the oil hazardous substance release response fund and all the proposed expenditures out of it. The Arctic Marine Resources Commission for $100,000 as I recall, is one that is a brand new one, or at least it wasn't in the proposed FY93 budget, let's put it that way. So I move the amendment.
I'll object to it.
Your discussion? Representative Brown?
The subcommittee accepted this recommendation from Representative Foster, Representative McLean, Senator Adams to continue this. I believe this was funded in the current year. And I think it is a worthwhile effort to gain acceptance of the industrial activity, the exploration and development that's going on offshore, where we know our response capability is less than adequate. It's less than adequate in calm waters, and when you're talking about trying to be able to respond in broken ice conditions, there are certainly a lot of issues there and further research and work that needs to be done. So I believe this is a worthwhile effort and would oppose the amendment.
Question. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Jaffo?
No.
Representative Kopanen? Representative Larson?
Yes.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Bomer?
Nope.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative McClain?
No.
Representative McCarr?
No.
Amendment number two, Representative Sharp.
I'll move amendment number two. Mr. Chairman, the main purpose of these amendments that I'm offering is the fact that the list keeps growing and growing and growing out of the oil, what we use the money for out of this fund, and the balance goes down less and less. On what we'll be able to afford to do in case of an emergency on a cleanup. And we keep piddling the stuff out into about 20-some areas now on the list. And I believe that in the long run, if we have another emergency, the spill response capability with the dollars in the bank is not going to be there. Although most of these probably are admirable by the people who's proposing them and probably promote a lot of jobs, I don't think that's the purpose of 470 funds. So I'm not going to take up all afternoon talking about it. It's too nice out there.
Representative Brown.
On amendment number two about the Citizens Oversight Council, I just remind people this was one of the main recommendations of the Oil Spill Commission. We passed it in 1990 to address the issue of complacency, which the Oil Spill Commission found was one of the main reasons that the Exxon Valdez spill occurred. I think it would be a mistake, such a short time after the spill, to get rid of the citizen watchdog group, which is in the budget of the legislature. And I think it would be a mistake to get rid of it now.
Question. Especially when we're studying pulp mills.
Question.
Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Larson?
No.
Representative Phillips?
No.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jackson?
No.
Representative McGarr?
No.
Representative
McCain? No.
What's the score? Nine to two?
Eight. 1-8.
Amendment number three, Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the amendment. The amendment basically is what we discussed a little bit about yesterday and said we had the opportunity to come back and address it again. The original proposal was to put $2 million into the DES response depot and core and
warrant number three.
Warrant number three?
That's the ferry.
Oh.
Ferry.
This is high.
Yep. Well, Mr. Chairman, I find that there's too many people like, and I love traveling on ferries. Believe me, I do. Especially between Haines, or Juneau going back to Haines. But other than that, I appreciate them other places, too, over to Seldovia. But I'm not so sure I like oil-sucking ferries. So, and this is what this is going to be. It's going to be a clean-up ferry that's authorized to have oil retrieving capabilities, which is, in my mind, a little thin guise of financing ferries out of this fund. So I know there was a bill passed to do, but we have a lot of bills and we don't fund a lot of things. So I go for it.
Does anyone want more information on it, Representative Brown? Mr. Ayers?
I would just say while he's coming up, we did hear a couple of...
Are these oil-sucking ferries here?
The subcommittee spent some time on this. I realize that this is the first step in what will be subsequent decisions down the road. I think it does fit within the purposes of the 470 fund. I think that a ferry equipped this way would be useful in responding to any future spills we might have. So I felt it was appropriate, as did the subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, when this bill occurred, there were several requests from the industry and DEC and ultimately the Coast Guard to use vessels, the Marine Highway System. First they used the Bartlett, then ultimately they requested and we provided the Aurora. The Aurora stayed with the spill as long as it could, and one of the things that the Coast Guard found, the Commission found, and Exxon and DEC said was we needed to have a vessel that could travel with the spill, capable of being a command vessel and moving equipment and housing personnel. There are a variety of metaphors that I could use. The oil sucking capability is not necessarily true. It's not equipped to retrieve, skim, or suck oil. It's equipped to provide the necessary facilities and equipment support that everyone found was lacking in the last spill. And that's why it's before you today. And it is the amount of money necessary to make the new vessel capable of doing those things. It is not the $50 or $60 million for the whole new ferry. It's just those particular aspects that are necessary to equip this vessel to assist the state, the Coast Guard, and the industry in the event of another catastrophe.
Mr. Chairman, is this concept supported by the governor?
This concept is supported by the governor. Governor talked to the sponsor of the original legislation a year ago. He supported it then, and he supports it now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson.
I guess I'm a little confused. Is this for the construction of a new ferry, or is it for the reconstruction of an existing one?
This money will be used. One of the things we did in the overview is that we're talking about the construction of a new vessel to replace the Malaspina. The Malaspina needs so much work that it makes more sense financially to replace the Malaspina. Over the next 3 years, we'll be phasing out the Malaspina and constructing a new ferry with federal highway funds and the money that's in replacement funds, and if necessary, a stream of revenue from the sales. This money will be used for the construction of that new vessel for those portions to make it ocean-going, a command center, and capable of handling equipment.
Okay, just a follow-up question. Representative Omar talked about people who work on bodies. I guess I'll use that same analogy here and try to ask a question. There's not much you can do to an aircraft carrier, say, to make a battleship out of it or vice versa. They're both ships, but they both have different functions. If this is done, will the ship still be able to be a functional ferry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the primary mission of the ferry will continue to be to provide service for passengers and vehicles as required under the National Highway Act. In addition to that, this money will enable it to be ocean-going and provide additional equipment as a command center, and the bridge probably in some app. Those are the two primary cost features of this. But it will not deter from its original mission.
My last question, and it's not in relation to the ferry itself. I can see where something like that is probably needed. It's the funding source, I guess. How much is going to be needed eventually to do all of this work? This $7.5 million is half of what's needed, all of what's needed?
The total request, as was in the fiscal note a year ago, was $14.5 million. That is the number. We've been through the naval architect. We have a project manager on board. That is the total. There's a $7.5 million request for 93. And there'll be a $7 million request in 94. And that will dovetail with the federal highway money. The total will be $14.5
million. Okay,
The total for the ship or the total out of the 47? The total cost of constructing a new vessel will be between $60 and $65 million.
Okay, so if $15 million over 2 years from the Oil and Hazardous Response Fund, the other $45 million is going to come from federal highway funds?
Yeah, it'll take $45 to $50 million from the federal highway funds. There's additional provision in the what is called the ICET, the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act. There's some funds in there for ferries, but it's very little. So the majority of it will come from the normal national highway funds.
And I don't know whether Jim is the person to answer my next question or not, but it's basically the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Fund.
Yes.
Was created, of course, to get $50 million so that if we ever had another emergency like we had 3 years ago, we'd have the funding to quickly respond. How much is going to be left in that fund after we do all the expenditures that are proposed this year? Does anyone know?
I do. Actually, the 470 fund was created long before the oil spill. It was not capitalized to the level that it is now until after the
$50 million level. I can recall that.
Representative Brown.
Specifically, in answer to his question, the carry forward spill reserve under the proposal as it stands coming out of our committee, including the ferry, will be $26.6 million. There is less. We are proposing a lower level of expenditure, even including the ferry. For this year, $26 million. Last year, the approved budget in 92 was $34.1 million, and there was a spill reserve of $12.4 million. So the spill reserve would have gone from $12.4 million to $26.6 million in 1 year. So I think, you know, we have been cautious in, and as has the department, in trying to minimize expenditures out of here. And it's just not true that the list is getting longer. The list is getting shorter, Mr. Chairman.
Is this list in a separate bill, too, or is this the only time this is coming before us?
We
approved it yesterday.
The list, yeah.
We approved it yesterday. It's in the your packet under
470.
See, where I'm having a rough time, Mr. Chairman, is, you know, I approve the project. I'm questioning the funding source.
Okay. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Ayers, in your opinion, expert opinion, do you feel that any of these special oil support features that's going to be built into the vessel will result in any additional operating costs over and above a normal ferry for the operating of that ferry during its lifetime?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sharp, there's no aspect of this that will require additional operating cost, except during a spill, you may man the command center differently. But there would be we anticipate no operating cost or requesting additional operating funds as a result of this, no.
One follow-up then. The actual $14.5 or $15 million then from the oil spill fund, is going to be for state match money to get federal money. Is that what it's like? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sharp, it can be and will be used as the match money. Otherwise, as the federal money comes in, there's a portion in the capital budget where you end up matching, you appropriate general fund monies for match. This money will be able to be used as, this can be used as the match money. So it will reduce ultimately the requirement of your match when you get to the federal budget and the capital budget in 93.
I was just wondering, Mr. Chairman, if that's the case, we might be able to use 470 fund to federal match money for the road going into Valdez, you know, to improve it so we can get down there faster. I mean, possible.
Mr. Chairman, on the subject of the funding source, it is something that we decided last year when we passed Senator Kurtula's bill, which authorized this as an appropriate funding source for this purpose. We're not creating a new rule here. We all had the opportunity to vote yes or no on Senator Kurtula's bill, which raised the public policy question of, is this appropriate? So this is just consistent with what we did last year and saying, let's get on with that decision. And let's get on with the vote.
Representative Larson.
Yes, I realize that it was part of the legislation, and it's a appropriate use under the legislation we passed. However, here we are using 470 funds to match federal highway dollars, but maybe in light of our earlier action, Mr. Chairman, what we should do is reduce corrections another $7.5 million to free up enough general funds here for the ferry.
Motion is to accept this decrement from the 470 fund, $7.5 million. Secretary, call the roll.
President Larson?
No.
President Phillips?
Yes.
President Sharp?
Yes.
President Barnes?
No.
President Boyer?
No.
President Barnes?
No.
President Brown?
No.
President Sackle?
No.
President Kopanen?
No.
No.
Amendment number four, Representative Sharp.
I started on this inadvertently before, but this would just return the $1,200 back, or $1,200,000 back to join the $800,000 to make the full $2 million for the DES response people, of course, as proposed by the administration, and at least in the first proposal, so that the DES would be the controlling organization for the $2 million allocation. Doesn't delete anything.
Representative Bryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would oppose the amendment. I think it's appropriate, the specific program that we have identified out of this $2 million that would go for developing a response capability in the Western Gulf, the Kodiak area, and in Southeast. The DES's proposal originally was for $5 million over 5 years. OMB rejected that, and then they submitted a new one for $2 million. Their proposal is not well-defined and is contingent on some other things happening, one of which is the hazards analysis, which is listed as a separate line. DES and DEC are jointly working on that project. The proposal as it stands will keep a continuation level of the employees at DES, Emergency Services, will in addition fund DES's increment request for a hazards materials response project of $400,000. I think that it is appropriate for DEC to oversee this coastal community project. DEC is the agency with oil spill response expertise and capability. These organizations have gone a long way in coordinating their efforts and merging their offices, and we spent a good bit of time on this in the subcommittee, and I believe that it's much preferable to follow the coastal demonstration project approach than to do what DES has described here that they would do for $2 million. One of the things they would do, they would spend $476,000.3 on travel. And their proposal is just not well-defined, and I think the subcommittee, with the cooperation of the department, made some progress in more precisely identifying what direction we want to go with this whole project. So I think it's good like it is.
I'd like to ask the subcommittee chair if the remaining 800 to DES, since I assume the $1.2 million being transferred will have nothing to do with overland transportation of crude oil. So I imagine the DES is the only one that would have any plans or any capability of implementing response depots and action plans along the pipeline to Valdez. Is that correct?
I'm not sure I understood the question.
DES is the only state agency then that has any funds in it, the 800,000 that's left, to do any organizational or funding, setting up of depots along the length of the pipeline, because I assume the DEC is just coastal depots, and so that has nothing
right
to do with it.
The DEC, $1.2 million, is to go for two specific projects that will be competitively bid. They will train people, identify an organization, acquire equipment, and begin the process of establishing response capability in the uncovered coastal areas where we have significant oil transport now. That was an approach recommended by the Regional Citizens Advisory Council of Prince William Sound, which at this whole thing came up because even though DES got $2 million last year, we don't have any core established yet. And so there's been, you know, a lot of work getting to this, but they both have response capability. They're trying to broaden the capability of what the oil response people do, so they wouldn't just do oil. They would respond to small spills of all types. But DES is generally more focused on hazardous materials and DEC on oil in the water.
Will DEC administer and select the competitive bids?
For the coastal cooperative, they will. For the hazmat demonstration project, DES will do that. That's $400,000 included within the $800,000 for DES to do a hazmat work on hazmat response, hazard materials response efforts, as distinguished from these coastal.
No, but you said there was going to be competitive bids on the coastal demonstration projects.
Yes.
On the two. Who administers the selection and the specs on what's called for on the bid? DEC?
DEC, under our proposal, DEC.
Further discussion? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I have a hell of a lot more faith in DES than I do in DEC. It's been said that the DEC's got the expertise and the capability. I would say the DEC's got the expertise but not the capability. And I do believe DES does have capability for an oil response and have effective results more so than DEC was. Therefore, supporting Representative Sharp's amendment.
I think the reverse is true, so I'm not supporting it. It's not what the citizens, whatever that citizens report came out 2 years ago.
Just one more comment. If you read the DES, what they would do if you gave the money to them, they are counting on heavy reliance on DEC. In fact, it sounds like they won't be able to do much until some decisions get made. And as we've talked in subcommittee, we really need a review of that whole law that was passed the same year as the spill. Significant questions are arising about whether we want to continue and really fully equip these things or whether a different model in the private sector would be a better approach, and we're going to continue looking at that.
Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Phillips?
Yes.
Representative Sharp?
Yes.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Boyer?
No.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Jacko?
No.
Representative Kopanen?
No.
President Larson?
No.
Barr?
No.
Representative McClay?
No.
Four yeas, seven nays.
Amendment number 5 by Sharp. Representative Sharp.
I ask a question, if I may, to the subcommittee chairman. Give me what the acronym stands for again, and what the responsibilities, the purpose of that organization is going to be.
Spill Prevention and Response is what SPAR stands for. And that's a new division created by this administration to concentrate all the spill-related activities, all the way, and the contaminated sites, contingency plan review, and other response activities and management of the department in that division.
What department?
The Department of Environmental Conservation. Right. And so they made a division just with those responsibilities.
Was the administration planning on funding it from a different source, since it wasn't in the proposed FY93 column?
Yes, they had proposed to fund it at $281,000 from general funds. And in our subcommittee review process of attempting to reduce the general fund expenditures, we identified that the particular activities, a portion of them, not all of them, we left $100,000 in general funds and proposed, with the commissioner's concurrence, to move $181,000 of this activity, since it is directly related to what the 470 fund is for and does, to be funded from the 470 fund, and the other portion from the general fund, recognizing that not 100% of what they do could be attributable, but a large share of it. And so we split the funding for the director's office. But I would not encourage us to delete 64% of this director's office. It would just not make the program function very well. And I think I have been impressed with the job that this particular group has done, and I think they are working well with DES to accomplish some things that make sense in providing overall response capability for the state.
Mr. Chairman, I won't move the amendment.
Oh, you won't?
No.
Okay. Amendment in our other packets, then, we have the first round, we have the Representative Phillips amendment that we didn't deal with.
That was amendment number 1, wasn't it?
Was amendment number 1, first packet amendment number 1.
DEC.
Oh, yeah. We didn't do that.
And I would ask that we amend this to eliminate the travel line, because we have that other proposal that's being worked on. Representative Phillips, is that agreeable?
Yes. Trying to slip the fence here.
Eliminate the travel one, because we have a proposal that's being worked up on that.
I'm not finding it. It's your DEC. I know, but
yesterday's packet.
It's past 2, okay.
Yeah. Number one.
Reduced Department of Personal Services by 1409.
And at the time, Mr. Chairman, that we discussed this, I asked if we could see a breakdown on where this would go, or if we just wanted to just take it across the board. And
Mr. Chairman, since you eliminated the travel, that's, unless you want to give me another 15 minutes, because I had it done within 15 minutes after the first initial. Well, it's about $1.017 million in GF. $110,000 GF receipts and $486,000 federal funds. Represents about approximately over 60%.